Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
And we're back with more River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Think back to 1996. Bill Clinton was president. The Dow Jones stock average was around 6,000. Something called DVDs were launched in Japan. The number of internet users broke through the 10 million mark. Princess Diana and Prince Charles were officially divorced. And a major snowstorm paralyzed the U.S. Midwest. Well, if you were here in the Midwest in 1996, you may remember that winter and that very frigid cold. That was the last time temperatures dropped as low as they are this week. Iowa State University and the University of Iowa both announcing that classes would be canceled from 5 p.m. today through noon on Thursday. Neither school has canceled classes in many years. Let's talk first of all with Alan Czarnecki, a professor of meteorology at the University of Northern Iowa. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben.
What can we expect over the next couple of days?
Well, we're probably going to have our coldest spell for the longest period of time since the time period you mentioned there. We have to go back to late January and early February of 96 to see something comparable. Thankfully, the cold spell that we're going to get into right now will not be as prolonged as what we saw in 1996. We actually set records at a number of locations for the number of consecutive hours that we were below zero. So thankfully, we're not going to approach the five-plus days that that spread out over in 1996, but we'll last for a couple of days here.
Mm-hmm. Does it matter where you are in the state? Will it vary from east to west, north to south in our state?
Well, there certainly will be some variation. For example, in terms of the wind chills, they'll probably be the worst in the northeast part of the state, and a little bit better, but a little bit better still. We're talking 30 to 40 below range for the wind chills, so it's not that much better. But yeah, the most extreme, both in terms of temperature and especially wind chill, probably be a little bit more to the north central and the northeast part of the state.
Mm-hmm. Polar vortex, we get to talk about that again. Remind us, what is it? That's what's causing it, right?
Right. Yeah. It's something that we've had. It's been around forever, but it's sort of caught the spotlight, I guess, in probably the last 10 years or so. There's a pool of especially cold air that accumulates near the North Pole during the winter months because of the darkness there. And this large mass of cold air kind of swirls around in a counterclockwise pattern up there. But it's not perfectly circular. It has lobes to it, and these lobes extend to the south away from that main pool of cold air. And these lobes kind of meander around. They retract, they advance, and so on. And so every so often, not every year, thankfully, but every so often, one of those lobes does dip down across the north central U.S., and we have that Arctic air looking to visit us here from now until sometime on Thursday. So.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring climate change into this conversation, because the president, as we know, has repeatedly denied the existence of climate change and sometimes points to individual weather events as evidence that climate change isn't real. This week is no different. On Monday, the president tweeted, and I quote, "In the beautiful Midwest, wind chill temperatures are reaching minus 60 degrees, the coldest ever recorded. In coming days, expect to get even colder. People can't last outside for even for minutes. What the hell is going on with global whamming?" Typo there. Global warming obviously meant. "Please come back fast. We need you." Talking to the global warming, I guess. So we've had you explain this a number of times, but please explain the basic misunderstanding here contained in this tweet.
Well, one thing that we should always be careful of is using specific instances to either support or prove, I guess, or disprove a particular idea. Certainly, there's going to be variation in the weather, a specific instance of a heat wave, for example. It's probably best not to to pin the proof of global warming on that heat wave, but it's also not good to pin the disapproval on an especially cold outbreak of air either. So, there's going to be some variation.
So climate is the average weather over a longer period of time. It's weather is what we have in a shorter period of time, today or tomorrow's weather. Is there any connection between the coming of the polar vortex and climate change? Do we know? Could there possibly be?
Well, I think that one has been studied a little bit less, perhaps, than some of the effects of the placement of the cold air on the strength of the jet stream. I think that the strongest winds and the storms that they're likely to steer probably have gotten a little bit more study in the literature than necessarily the exact placement of that cold air. But likely there would be some differences that we would expect with those changes.
Mm-hmm. This week's temperatures will drop so low in the state that an entire generation of Iowans, Midwesterners, have never experienced such a cold snap. Do you remember the cold of 96, the last time it was this cold?
I do. In fact, as you had mentioned, there was a snowstorm that came through a few days prior to that, the beginning of the cold snap, and it was actually the second of two winter storms, and the University of Northern Iowa closed classes on two consecutive Fridays, which is very unusual. And again, that second one brought lots of snow to the Waterloo area. We had over 10 inches here. And Des Moines had their biggest snowstorm in about 23 years. They had close to 14 inches there. But yeah, it was that cold that kind of drifted down behind the storm about 3 days later and sent the temperatures here below zero. The record here in Waterloo for that was 139 hours that we were below zero.
Mm.
And Des Moines was 132 hours, so not too much better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does this extreme cold, Alan, to close here, does this extremely cold, pretty snowy winter tell us anything about the spring and summer to come?
Well, I kind of like the idea of assuming that the next season will be patterned after the current season as a first approximation. So, you know, the first part of our winter season really has been fairly mild. It was not until mid-January that things took that turn towards the north, I guess. And so it kind of depends on which part of that season you want to latch on to, I guess, as far as extending that into the spring. But for the most part, the climate outlooks are unfortunately not providing very clear indication which way things are going to go either this spring or this summer. So we'll see if that changes.
Is precipitation pretty much in the norm?
Item I would note is that the summertime precipitation right now is projected to likely be a bit above normal.
Mm.
Other than that, there are what we call equal chances for all other categories and time periods.
Alan Czarnecki, thank you for lending us some of your expertise, professor of meteorology at the University of Northern Iowa. Stay warm, Alan. Thanks for the information.
Thanks, Ben. You too.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, talking about the extreme cold hitting today, tomorrow, into Thursday. Let's talk about how our bodies react to extreme cold and how to protect yourself from potentially dangerous cold weather. Kevin Craigle is with me. He's a professor of human physiology, also associate provost for faculty at the University of Iowa. Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Ben.
Tell us, what are the basics of how the human body reacts to cold like this?
Well, the human body is geared towards preserving core body temperature. And so we want to have a stable internal core body temperature. What happens when we get exposed to cold is that we vasoconstrict the skin.
What's that mean?
And that means to close down the vasculature in our periphery, fingers, toes, ears, nose. And so we want that warm blood that would normally be coursing through those regions to go and stay internal.
Mm-hmm.
Maintain our core body temperature at that normal range of 98, 99 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so your body is saying, okay, the torso is more important than any hand or leg.
Correct.
Okay.
And so you then pay the price of that reduced blood flow to the extremities. They get cold and potentially can progress to more serious consequences.
Okay, so what are the biggest dangers when we talk about cold weather?
So the two primary that we should be concerned about at this point is hypothermia, or a reduction in our internal body temperature, And the other is frostbite, damage to peripheral tissues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, hypothermia. Let's take that example. We're somewhere where we'll be talking to the DOT in just a moment. We're out in the cold somewhere. We're getting colder and colder. What can we do about that?
So the body initially tries to vasoconstrict, retain heat, mm-hmm. also start shivering. So when you start noticing a shivering response, you're starting to see a drop in core body temperature typically. And obviously, the goal there is to try to rewarm, get into a warm location, clothing, things like that. That can progress to more serious consequences. You're going to start seeing situations where you'll have challenges with dexterity, slurring of speech, cognitive function declines as you get more and more hypothermic.
Mm-hmm. And that means it's already very serious.
Correct.
When your speech is affected, when your thinking is confused.
Absolutely. You should be going to an emergency room at that point.
Okay. Does it help in that stage if you can remember to jump up and down, some kind of exercise to the extent that you can wherever you are?
Certainly muscle contraction, which is analogous to shivering, is going to generate heat. So if you can find mechanisms to generate heat internally, that'll help.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the other big danger you named frostbite,
right,
to exposed skin. What happens there?
What happens is you progress from frost nip, which is a more mild situation, to frostbite, where you're actually freezing tissue in the body. Usually you form ice crystals in the tissue. And so when you get to that stage, you need to be really careful in terms of how you address it, how you rewarm. There are certain precautions you need to take. And again, typically when there's real frostbite, you should be going and getting medical treatment.
Right. So when we have temperatures of 20, 30 below, plus a wind chill, for instance, I don't know if you're out, even some, there are bike people who are biking at this time.
Right.
You don't want exposed skin, because when you add those, the temperature with a wind chill, you might have a minus 50 on your face.
Right. And so you're dealing with that convective heat loss, which can really remove a lot of the heat from the skin and make it even more susceptible to damage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So trying to keep warm, you want to be dry, right? What difference does that make between being dry and having wet socks or a wet sweater on?
Well, the problem with dampness is that water conducts heat 25 times greater than air. So if you fall in a lake, obviously that's one problem. But even perspiration, if you have damp clothing, you're wicking a lot of heat away from the skin. And also, you reduce your insulative capacity of the clothing by about 90% when it's damp. So it's really important to keep dry clothing, or if you have damp clothing, you need to remove it as quickly as possible.
Oh, so that's right. So you may have been doing some strenuous activity out in some cold weather. You worked up even a sweat, and then you sit down for a half an hour, and all of a sudden you're shivering.
Right. Absolutely.
That's because that moisture is pulling the warmth away from your body.
Right.
Other myths that are attached with cold weather and coping with cold weather, Kevin?
Well, one of the biggest myths is that alcohol can help you at least make you feel warm. Well, the problem is that alcohol opens up the blood vessels in the skin, and so it's actually counterproductive. It's going to help dissipate a lot of heat. So it also is a dehydrator, and obviously the impact on cognitive function. So alcohol is definitely a problem during cold exposures. The other point I'd mention is the idea of exercise in the cold and whether you can damage the lungs, for example. If you go out and you run, for example, or bike, you feel that burning in the throat and the airways, and that is an irritation, but it's just dry, cold air getting humidified, extracting some of the moisture from our respiratory passages. So if you're healthy, you have no predisposed conditions, exercise is fine. You just need to make sure you have the right covering on your hands and face.
And look at the surface so you're not on ice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
but then also in this cold weather, use your nose, what it was built for, to warm air rather than breathing through your mouth, right?
Right. And usually a covering of the nose and mouth, which is going to retain some of that moisture that you typically lose. And you do tend to get much more dehydrated in cold weather with the very low humidity. So that kind of covering is important.
Mm-hmm. Why can some people cope better with cold better than others?
We humans adjust to and acclimatize to heat really, really well. Cold, not so much, but we do have that capacity. Certainly different body types are going to be important. The more muscle mass you have, the more capacity you have to generate heat, for example. If you have more adipose tissue, you have more insulation. But surface area to mass ratio is a real consideration. You know, infants, older individuals have a much larger surface area to mass. They lose heat much more quickly. So those are a couple of different populations that are much more at risk in these cold temperatures.
Mm-hmm. Can I condition myself to withstand the cold better?
You can. It's a small adjustment.
It's not fun.
It's not fun, but you can see small adjustments. Say if you swim in cold water like you do, you will see some improvements in your ability to tolerate.
Okay, very good. Kevin Craigle, professor of human physiology at the University of Iowa. Some cautionary words and some facts about how the human body reacts to cold weather. Kevin, stay warm, and thanks for the information.
Thank you, Ben.
To finish up, let's talk with Craig Bargefried. He is with the Iowa DOT Winter Operations Administrator. Craig, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Tell us, what is the DOT in Iowa recommending regarding travel during this frigid weather period?
Well, obviously, we our first concern throughout this period is public safety. And we want to do whatever we can to get the right information out to folks as they are making plans for traveling. So we have a number of resources available for folks to gain information on current conditions.
Mm-hmm.
511 is obviously a good source of information to gather what current road conditions are. Now, there's also a layer on 511 that you can click on to see where our plows are, and you can also see the photos from our plow trucks. All 900 plus plow trucks are now outfitted with cameras that are forward facing that take photos of the system and the current conditions from an operator's perspective.
That's pretty
neat.
Well,
that can give you a good idea of what's going on the system currently.
And I love the DOT's 511 app. I use that on my phone quite a bit. That's a great map of the state, the major roadways, and the condition that they are up to the minute. That's really an incredible resource there, Craig.
It is, and it's one that's available to anyone that can get onto the website and see that information.
Right. Free of charge, we should mention.
Free
there.
Of charge.
So I imagine that if you're thinking of traveling, if you can put it off, it's probably a good idea over the next couple of days, a longer distance in the Midwest?
Absolutely. We're seeing some record temperatures and wind chills, and it is a dangerous situation. So unless you really, really need to travel, this is a time to hunker down at home and enjoy a good book.
All right.
or a movie.
Exactly. If you do need to drive, what should you absolutely have in your car?
Well, we advise everyone to make sure that you have the proper winter clothing, winter kit. So everything from having jumper cables to the proper clothing, blankets, a first aid kit, make sure that your cell phone or other devices are properly charged and that you have a car charger with you. So in case you do need to make a emergency call, you have the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's take a worst case scenario. Your car breaks down out in the country or gets stuck. Otherwise, you're not in the city. You can't just run to an occupied building or home. What do you do, Craig?
Well, obviously, the first thing to do is stay with your vehicle. These conditions, as you just described previously, are very serious, and frostbite can occur very quickly. So we advise stay with your vehicle. Contact 911, contact law enforcement, and they will do their best to try to get to you or send help to you. Especially in the kind of conditions we've seen recently with blowing snow, low visibilities, the moment you get out of your car, you are putting yourself at risk of not only the conditions, but possibly being hit by other vehicles. So we really strongly advise folks to stay in their car and stay with their vehicle.
Right. How many snow plows did you say could be active at once statewide?
Well, we have just over 900 trucks in our fleet statewide in our 101 garages. And as I'm looking at our website right now, we have 273 that are currently active.
Wow.
out on the system somewhere in the state.
What a massive undertaking. What are tips for us for driving safely when we are with the snowplows out on the roads?
So one of the biggest things we like to tell the public is that make sure to slow down and be very cautious when operating near one of our plows. This time of year, when we're in these conditions, our plows are operating somewhere in that 10, 15, 20 to 30 mile an hour range, just depending on what they're doing and what the conditions are. So we're moving slowly, so you could potentially come up on our plow very quickly. Mm-hmm. The other thing we advise is that this year, all of our plows are outfitted with a amber, blue, and white lighting package. So if you're coming up on a vehicle and you see an amber, blue, and white lighting package, that means that you're approaching a snowplow from the rear. And that snowplow, as I just said, is operating at a very slow speed. So you need to reduce your speed and begin to approach with caution as you come up on that plow. Our plows are big. We have plows set up differently. So not only do we have the plow on the front end of the truck, we could potentially have a wing on the right side or the left side. Or in some cases, we could be operating what we call a tow plow, which is a large piece of equipment that's attached to a truck that we could deploy primarily to the right-hand side of the truck.
Okay.
And the purpose for that is to basically allow us to clear a larger area at one time.
Craig, we've run out of time. Thank you for the wintertime tips, making sure we stay well away from your snowplows, doing a wonderful job keeping our streets and highways clear this season. Craig Bark-Fried is Winter Operations Administrator for the Iowa DOT. Thanks for making time for us, and thanks extended also to your crew for helping us out this winter.
Oh, thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity.
River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Politics Day tomorrow. Also, when it's cold, politics are hot. Please join us tomorrow on the program. I'm Ben Kiefer. Until then.